Well, thanks, Dan, and thanks to the conference organizers for allowing me to present these data today. Men who have sex with men represent a disproportionate burden of STD and HIV in the United States. Approximately 4% of U.S. men are MSM, yet they represent over 70% of recent HIV cases among U.S. men and 64% of all recent primary and secondary syphilis cases. Both biological and behavioral factors affect HIV and STD transmission dynamics. In this talk, I'll focus on an important behavioral determinant, the rate at which new sexual partnerships form. We became interested in calculating these rates for MSM after conducting a similar analysis among heterosexuals, where we estimated partnership formation rates using cross-sectional data. So using a random digit dial survey of Seattle heterosexuals, we found that at every age, less than 50% of adults reported forming a new partnership in the past year, dropping to less than 20% in their late 30s. When I plot the annual average partnership formation rate then, you can see that consequently, this rate peaks around age 19 or 20 and then declines steadily. Given the profound disparities in HIV and other STD rates between MSM and heterosexuals and within the MSM population, we sought to repeat these analyses among MSM to explore if their patterns of partnership formation could help explain part of these disparities. But among MSM, calculating these rates became more complicated. We discovered that in the absence of data with complete partnership enumeration, cross-sectional data presented two principal challenges. First, we are most interested in the life course of partnership formation rates and how these may affect disease transmission. In our heterosexual analyses, where participants were asked detailed questions about their five most recent partners, this resulted in nearly half of participants describing their entire sexual history. With samples of urban MSM, however, few are able to describe their entire lifetime sexual history using these survey methods, since the mean number of lifetime partners is generally higher. This makes it difficult to make assumptions about the timing of nondescribed partnerships, particularly over the span of many years. Therefore, among MSM, we chose to derive partnership formation rates using only data about partnerships in the past year and the past 5 years. The second challenge is the potential for a cohort effect. In other words, can we assume that partnership formation patterns are the same among MSM born at different times? We explored two possible ways for answering this question. First, we compared recent partnership formation rates in one cohort to earlier rates in an older cohort. The second way was to compare our findings with a more recent data source. So, the overall primary objective of this study was to estimate age-specific partnership formation rates using a population-based sample of urban MSM, and in doing so, try to address the challenges that I just described. So, for those of you who don't know, the Urban Men's Health Survey was a large cross-sectional random digit dial survey conducted between 1996 and 98 in four U.S. cities. Men in randomly called households were eligible if they were at least 18 years of age and either reported same-sex sexual behavior since the age of 14 or self-identified as gay, homosexual, or bisexual. For these analyses, we focused on variables in the Urban Men's Health Survey pertaining to the number of partners. These included the number of partners in the past 5 years and in the past year. We also used detailed partnership data from up to four partners in the past year. Also, age at sexual debut and demographic data, specifically age. To help us explore potential cohort effects, we also used data from two random digit dial surveys of Seattle MSM conducted in 2003 and 2007. Now, the Seattle RDDs have inclusion criteria similar to the Urban Men's Health Study, and we used a single variable, the reported number of partners in the past year. In order to estimate partnership formation rates at each age, we had to estimate the number of new partnerships each man formed during each year of his life. And for this study, we looked at both the past year and the past 5 years. So to do this, we created two windows of time, the number of partners during the 1 year prior to the interview, and the number of partners in the prior 5 years minus the number in the past year. These data also included detailed partnership data for up to four recent partners in the past year. A question for each of these partners asked if the partnership started more than a year ago. If this was indicated, we did not include that partner in the count for new partners in the past year. Instead, we assumed that that partner was included in the previous time window. Finally, we assumed that partnerships were distributed evenly within each of these two windows. And after doing this, we could approximate the number of partnerships begun at each age. We calculated partnership formation rates by dividing the total number of partnerships begun at an age by the total amount of person time observed at that age. We assumed that person time for each participant began accruing at age 18 and ended at the midpoint of their age at interview. From the 2,881 Urban Men's Health participants, we excluded 329 who were missing at least one of the variables used in our analysis. Among this sample, the average age was 39, about 20% were men of color, and over 70% had at least a college degree. There was a slight difference in the proportion of men from each city, and over half of the men were born in the 1950s and 60s. I hope you can see those bars. So first, some descriptive data about the number of sex partners in the past year among MSM and Urban Men's Health. For this plot, we capped the variable at 50, and you can see that the distribution has a strong positive skew. This is also borne out when we compare the median and mean. The median number of partners in the past year was 3, while the mean was 11. And you can see that tall bar on the far left. A quarter of MSM reported a single sex partner in the previous year. On this chart, I present the proportion of MSM at each age who reported at least one new partnership in the preceding year. At the youngest ages, close to 100% of MSM reported at least one new partner in the past year. This proportion declined through the 20s, 30s, and 40s, but remained at a long plateau, around 75%. Through their 50s, at least half of MSM reported forming a new partnership in the past year. So this slide is one of two that includes our primary findings. These are the partnership formation rates in the last year among MSM in roughly 5-year age groups. The rates among the youngest two groups, so ages 18 to 29, start at between 9 to 10 partnerships per year. The peak partnership formation plateaus around 30 to 44-year-olds at approximately 12 to 14 partnerships per year. And then the partnership formation rates drop to between 7 to 8 partnerships per year in the late 40s and throughout the 50s. Now, this pattern is a marked contrast to what we saw among heterosexuals, who peaked in the very earliest age groups and then declined over time. But, of course, because the number of partners has such a non-normal or skewed distribution, we also looked at the median number of new partnerships formed in the past year using box plots. So just to remind you, that line you see in the middle of the blue box represents the median number of partners. And looking at these findings, as we'd expect, the median number of partnerships is much lower than the mean results, at less than 5 for each age group. However, the general pattern is relatively similar, with a peak in the 30s, followed by a gradual decline through later adulthood. To explore potential cohort effects, we use data from the past 5 years, rather than just the past 1 year, to construct new rates. Thus, among the 35 to 39-year-old age group, so right here, data from the previous 5 years provided estimates for ages 31 to 39. We then compared the rates estimated using 5-year data to rates estimated using 1-year data among an age group analogous to the age range covered by the 5-year data. So for example, among the 35 to 39-year-olds, we compared their 5-year rates to the 1-year rates among 31 to 39-year-olds. Therefore, if the partnership formation rates are relatively similar, we can assume that there was no secular change in rates, at least in the past 5 years or so. So this chart presents these comparisons. First, in blue, I plotted the partnership formation rate using data on partners in the past 5 years among 5-year age groups. So now in green, I plotted the rate in the past year among the cohort with the analogous 1-year data. And you can see that there's not a consistent difference between the rates among cohorts or across cohorts. These data, therefore, do not provide evidence of a clear secular trend, at least between these consecutive birth cohorts. An alternative way to explore potential cohort effects is to use a different data source. In this case, we compared the number of partnerships formed in the past year between the Urban Men's Health study and the two Seattle RDDs, which we combined. At most ages, the Urban Men's Health participants, who are shown here in blue, had much higher rates than the Seattle MSM, shown in greenish yellow. However, the shape of the partnership formation across age groups is relatively similar to what we found in the Urban Men's Health Study. So unfortunately, since Seattle was not included in the Urban Men's Health Study, we cannot say whether the change in rates was a true change over the past 10 years or if these results merely reflect differences between these populations. In summary, our findings suggest sustained partnership formation rates throughout adulthood among MSM with a long plateau between the ages of 30 and 44. Indeed, over half of MSM continued to form new partnerships at all ages. We also explored potential cohort effects, but our data, which did have a limited ability to address this question, did not provide clear evidence of a secular trend in partnership formation rates, at least within the past 5 to 10 years or so. Our study had the following limitations. So first, I've already highlighted several of the methodological issues with using cross-sectional data. Second, the Urban Men's Health Study was conducted in the mid to late 90s, so many high-risk MSM from early birth cohorts may have died from AIDS or other causes, resulting in survivor bias. Third, we used aggregate partnership data for our analyses, which is subject to misclassification, and our methods may also overestimate true partnership formation rates if some partnerships bridged the different time periods that our variables measured and were counted twice. We accounted for this as much as our data would allow. Fourth, these estimates include all sexual partnerships, including all types of sex and partnerships with women. Anal sex partnerships with men, specifically those in which the anal sex is unprotected, are likely the most applicable from a disease transmission viewpoint. The structure of these data didn't allow us to know about condom use rates in all previous partnerships. Finally, we acknowledge that the rates alone do not provide all the information to comprehensively assess the role partnership formation patterns play in disease transmission dynamics. So what would we want? Ultimately, I think we'd like to include not just the timing, but also the number of sexual acts within a partnership, sexual role, and condom use. Our findings show what we can get using cross-sectional data, or these cross-sectional data. Serial cross-sectional data could provide more, and of course, longitudinal data would be the best. In conclusion, our findings of sustained partnership formation rates throughout adulthood are consistent with the late peak incidence of HIV among MSM. This is in contrast to the pattern we observed among heterosexuals who peaked much earlier in their life course. Nevertheless, the influence of partnership formation rates relative to other behavioral and biological factors remains unclear. On the research side, our age-specific race should be helpful to researchers employing age-structured mathematical models. But on the programming side, our findings have the strongest implication for viral infections, such as HIV and herpes. For these infections, prevalence tends to rise with age. Thus, sustained partnership formation rates demonstrate the need for prevention messages to be directed at all MSM, even well into adulthood. And finally, our study highlights the methodological challenges of cross-sectional data. Clearly, longitudinal data with complete partnership enumeration over a long period of time are necessary to fully parameterize partnership formation rates among MSM. So I'd like to thank the Urban Men's Health participants, investigators, my colleagues at the UW Center for AIDS and STD, and of course my mentor, Dr. Matt Golden. Thank you. Well, it's... Sure. Sevgi asked if we had the data to look at social and contextual factors related to the formation of these partnerships. We have data, of course, about the individual. We don't have data about the context in which that partnership was formed. So yes, we could look at some individual factors. We could look at, you know, class, income, et cetera. But we don't have much data, if any, I can remember correctly, about the individual partners. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'd like to ask all the panelists to come up and if there's any questions for them all as a group. Don't worry, there's plenty of time to get to lunch. You can have, well, for those of you who want to fight for the seats, fight for the seats. Okay, please. Not well.
Hello. That's good.
Much better.
I'm sorry, of what factors? Can you say that again? Yeah, that's a great question, and I think it comes back to some of the other questions I had around. We do have a lot more information. We haven't looked at it yet. I think I've been hesitant to really look into the data because of our 7 cases, and it's a small number, and I don't want to dig too deep. But we do ask the girls a lot of questions related to their chlamydia diagnosis, and we ask questions about, at the time of their diagnosis, do you plan to continue with this partner or not, and if no, why not? So we asked, so among the girls, I have to think for just a moment, I think about a third of the girls said that they did not plan to continue their relationship with their partner at the time of the diagnosis. But what the interesting thing to me is of those girls who said, I don't plan to ever have sex with him again, half of the time they said it was because of the chlamydia diagnosis. They said, you know, he cheated on me, I can't trust him, you know, whatever. But half the time, the girls say things like, well, you know, I met someone else, or he met someone else. Or so I think in this population of relatively young women, there's this high natural turnover in relationships. And so one of the main questions I had is it the diagnosis that's causing the relationships to end? She gets pissed off and dumps them. And then she has new partners, and we know that having a new partner is a risk factor for getting an STI. You know, we know condom use wanes very quickly in new relationships. These women in particular have sex very quickly without knowing their partners very well. We call it the head over heels phenomenon, where the younger women in our sample are much more likely to say their partner is a main partner, but they're also more likely to have partnerships of shorter duration, partnerships in which they don't know their partners very well. So these young women are very quick to fall in love and have sex without a condom, without knowing a lot about their partners. So one of the main questions I had was, does that diagnosis cause her to want to end that relationship, and then she has a new partner, and that's a risk? And I think, I mean, I'll be talking beyond the data at this point, but it is my feeling that we are seeing some of that. There is some contribution of the diagnosis to the ending of the relationship, but there's also just this natural turnover. And so this comes back to my point around, I think it's the other partners, the additional partners, I think it's the networks. I think there's a lot going on at the network level with these women, which isn't to say that, well, I'll stop there. We can talk more. It's a great question. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's an excellent comment. First of all, let me just say, keep up the good work with what you're doing. That's great. Your point is one that makes me often think that we really, really, really need to continue with the condom message. I think that, you know, there's been some condom fatigue and burnout on condoms, and condoms don't work for everybody, and not everybody likes condoms, and so I think a lot of people have worked very hard and creatively at developing other STD prevention strategies, things around monogamy, routine screening, but I really think your point speaks to the importance of condoms, and that we really need to keep that message out there and keep it strong. Women, you know, people, you know, I think that, you know, one of the final bullets I had in one of my final slides was this idea around initiating condom use in new relationships and then maintaining condom use in relationships that continue. And in the absence of being, you know, having a full STD screen and maintaining monogamy in relationships, I think, you know, after that, one of the next best things we can be doing is the condom promotion. So, and the other thing is, I'm not a clinician. I don't know if we have any clinicians on the panel. It would be great for me if a clinician in the audience could respond to your question about what to talk to the girls about. I think the important thing clinicians do around diagnosing STDs and like chlamydia in young women is to have it not be so much a conversation about where you got it from. And as I said earlier, we don't know the duration of infection. We can't point the fingers at partners, but to just, you know, maintain the idea that screening is important, testing is important, condoms are important. And you know, often we won't know where the STD came from, and I think clinicians do try to deflect that conversation about, you know, trying to pinpoint the particular partner. But if there are clinicians in the room who would like to comment on that, I'd love to hear what other people think.
Please join me in thanking our panelists for great presentations.